Find the Word of God. And let me just say this about Larry's ministry. I love those stories. I could sit all day long and hear about somebody walking into a room ready to kill themselves, and they open up the Scripture, and God, I mean, that's just God. That's the way He does things. And I'm so grateful for Larry and Gideon's International. And the way you can give to that as you're leaving this morning, you can. The guys will be at the back to take that. And so I hope that you will be a part of that, because it's a very important ministry. And I hope that you'll give to it. I meant to say this last week. We have different people who meet every week who aren't here. I had the joy of going by and visiting with Sarge and his wife. And Sarge is, he's a young guy. He's somewhere in his 90s, I'm not sure. And they're not able to come right now. But he told me something cool. He said, "Bill, I want you to know I got a front row seat every Sunday morning in front of the radio." And I thought that was kind of cool. His wife and him get around. And then you got Sue Wilson, I believe, that uses the 98.3. And then there are quite a few that use Facebook Live. And I just think it's very neat that those who can't be with us can be with us. And so I'm saying hi to them. And I want you to realize that they're a lot of times here every week. And they worship with us at home. And if you have any questions about Ecclesiastes, Sarge loves that book, and you can talk to him with all your hard questions. But Ecclesiastes is such an incredibly honest book about life and truth. And I love this passage this morning in chapter 5, verses 8 through 20. He's going to tell you the truth about power, money, and materialism. Not many people will tell you the truth, but King Solomon, the wisest man to ever live, is going to tell you and me this morning the absolute 100% truth about power, about money, and about materialism. Because, see, people in this world think that if they had more money, if they had more power, and if they had more stuff, they would be happy. King Solomon, who had more money, more stuff, some say he possibly was the richest person to ever live. And I read several accounts that said he could have been a trillionaire. We don't know and won't know, but he was a very wealthy king. And he's here to share with us the truth about power and about money and materialism. And a lot of times you and I think, well, if I just had more money, I'd be happy. If I had a different job, or I had a different this or that. No, folks. Solomon is going to speak to us some really honest stuff this morning. So let's look beginning in verse 8. He says in verse 8, "Don't be surprised if you see a poor person being oppressed by the powerful, and if justice is being miscarried throughout the land, for every official is under orders from higher up, and matters of justice get lost in red tape and bureaucracy." Yeah, that's true. There's so much red tape and bureaucracy. I'm just guessing that government has more paperwork than any other organization in the world. But he says in verse 9, he says, "Even the king milks the land for his own profit. Those who love money," and I love this, "those who love money will never have enough. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. The more you have," this is true, "the more you have, the more people come to help you spend it. So what good is wealth, except perhaps to watch it slip through your fingers?" You ever feel like sometimes your money just goes through your fingers? And he says, "There's another serious problem I've seen under the sun. Hoarding riches harms the saver. Money is put into risky investments that turn sour, and everything is lost. In the end, there is nothing left to pass on to one's children. We all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as on the day we were born. We can't take our riches with us. And this, too, is a very serious problem. People leave this world no better off than when they came. All their hard work is for nothing, like working for the wind. Throughout their lives, they live under a cloud, frustrated, discouraged, and angry. Even so, I have noticed one thing, at least, that is good. And I like this part. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short life God has given them, and to accept their lot in life. And it is a good thing to receive wealth from God and the good health to enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your lot in life, this is indeed a gift from God. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time to brood over the past. A very interesting, honest passage. And so let's begin by looking at the first negative. Do not be surprised by the abuse of power. It should not surprise you and me that there is corruption among those who have power. It should not surprise you and me that in government and also in the business world that there are those people in power who do not care about anything but money. They don't care about people. They don't care about their well-being. And they see that their power is their way to stay wealthy, to have money, to have income. And they abuse it. And Solomon is saying that he sees this and he's involved in politics. And one of the things that Solomon is seeing is that, yes, it goes on. I know in the Dominican Republic, one of the things I learned a long time ago is that in that area of Barona, that the city police are corrupt. I mean, you are just warned that if they pull you over, they may be looking for a bribe, and they probably are corrupt, and so therefore they have used their position to take advantage of people. And it's kind of interesting. These guys have guns, and you're there, and they're looking at you, and, you know, you have no choice sometimes but to do what they tell you. And I've asked Franklin, the missionary there, and he's told me, he said, "Oh, you don't trust those guys." I'm thinking, they're policemen. Who do you trust if you can't trust policemen? And he has said several times, "But they're corrupt, Bill, they're corrupt." And it's just a fact of life in their country and in many parts of the world. But here's what I know about power. The lust for power and the lust for money are a catalyst for oppressing people. When people have power and when people have money, something happens to their sensitivity about other human beings. It should not surprise us that in many cases, those in power don't care about people who they are supposed to be serving. It should not surprise us that people take advantage of other people, those who are in control. It should not surprise us. It's bad, it's wrong, but it shouldn't surprise us. And that's what Solomon is saying here. He's saying you shouldn't be surprised by those abuses that go around in the world that we live in. But he's also saying that, you know, you also need to understand that we need government. We need structure. Verse 9 is a difficult verse to translate, and it's very hard to understand. It says in the NIV Bible, "The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields." What does that mean? Well, I read and I read and I read, and what they seem to say is that even though there is corruption in government and in power, we still need structure. You know, the big thing in our world today is These people, they call themselves anarchists. You know what an anarchist is? They're a person who wants no law. They want no structure. They are against all that stuff. And you know what anarchy leads to? Craziness. You have no rule of law. You have no rules for a living. And so we need structure. We need, and you'll say, well, you can't trust anybody more. That's true, but we still need policemen. I trust policemen. You say there's bad ones out there. I know. There's bad people everywhere. But we need structure. We need government. And if you don't believe it, go to a country where there is anarchy or where there is no structure. Years ago, we went to Belarus, and after the fall of communism, one of the things that I learned is the people there were struggling because when communism failed, it affected everybody. Because you see, communism at least meant they had a place to sleep and someone was going to turn the heat on at night. Now, can you imagine being in a country where you don't even control the heat? The government did. And I was talking when I was there with this lady, and I thought she was going to be excited about her new freedom that she had in Belarus. And she said, well, the problem is that there are corrupt people up there who no longer turn on the heat. And she said, what she was saying is, we miss communism. And I'm thinking, that's crazy, you miss communism. She said, they turned the heat on. Now you think about it. The government, there's always going to be corruption. And there's always going to be people and corporations who abuse the people they're supposed to serve. It's just going to happen. But how do you and I, as citizens, as Christian citizens, how do we fight that? Well, I'll tell you, Jesus gives the perfect example. Here's how you fight the abuse of power. You fight the abuse of power by being a servant. You know, see, I even see it in churches with pastors that the pastors think the church is there to serve them. They're the leader and everybody just, you know. And a lot of times the pastor never serves anybody but himself. But when I look at the ministry of Jesus Christ, when I look at how to keep from being corrupted by power, how to be keep from becoming a person who no longer cares about other people, it's real simple. Just look at the life of Jesus. In John chapter 13, when he goes to a house with his disciples, there's no one there to wash the feet. Right? Remember that? So what does Jesus do? He puts on a towel and washes feet. You see, a servant leader is someone who serves people. If you don't want to be corrupted by power and all that, you know how you do it? You serve other people. As a matter of fact, in Galatians 5:13, it says, instead, use your freedom to serve one another in love. In Matthew 20:28, it talks about Jesus. It says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others, and to give His life a ransom for many. How do you keep from being an out of control power person? You serve people. You know, that's one thing I love about this church. It just has an incredible number of servants. We were up here for the fifth quarter on Friday night. You know, fifth quarters go past my bedtime. But to see 50 kids in here and worshiping was cool. And I was grateful for that. But I also had in the back of my mind, we got a funeral here in the morning at 9 o'clock. And you know, if you have a group of teenagers here on Friday night, it's going to need some work before Saturday morning for the funeral, right? But I'll tell you what I love about our church. We have men here and women who just cleaned it up and got it ready. So when we came in the next morning to say goodbye to a friend we loved, it was ready. Now, they didn't get paid to do that. They just did it. And that, you know, if you want to be sure that you're not abusing your power, you know what you do? You pick up a towel and wash somebody's feet. It's the simplest way to keep that from happening. Do not be surprised by oppression, but do not be one who oppresses. Be one who serves. Second thing, don't seek happiness in money. You know, this guy is possibly a trillionaire. It is estimated that annually, just in gold alone, that Solomon received $20 million. And history considers him to be one of the wealthiest men to ever live. And yet, he comes to us and he writes to us these words that we find in verse 10. Those who love money will never have enough. Now, it is not wrong to have money. It's wrong to love money. Two different things. He says, how meaningless, this is so true, how meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. You know, with money you can purchase all kinds of things, but you can't purchase happiness. And Solomon's just being honest. He says, you guys think that just because you're rich, you're happy. The book of Ecclesiastes proves that that is wrong. He says, the more you have, the more people come to help you spend it. I've read stories about those people who win the lottery only to lose the money they have because all the family comes to town to kind of mooch off them. One commentator called them the leeches. When you have lots of money, you better look out for the leeches because they are going to try to get their cut. And he says, the more you have, the more people come to help you. So what good is wealth except perhaps to watch it slip through your fingers? Now, that is a very true statement. See, a lot of times we think if we just had more money, we'd be happier. That is not true. Now, I'm not denying the fact you need to be able to buy food and have a place to live. But the studies have shown once you get past that, the more money you have doesn't necessarily make you more happy. Happiness is not found in money. It's not found in possessions. It just is not. As a matter of fact, it can make you very unhealthy. And when you have a lot of wealth, a lot of times your health can suffer. Now, I found this incredibly interesting. I love reading about people. How many have ever heard of John D. Rockefeller? Right? He was the first billionaire to ever live. And he's kind of a cool dude. If you go to New York, isn't that called the Rockefeller Center? Isn't that there? He established all kinds of different, not ministries, some ministries, but institutions that helped with science. And I want to read this to you, and I know it'll take a few seconds, but it's just to illustrate the fact that money doesn't help you be happy. Matter of fact, it can make you sick. It says the very first billionaire, John David Rockefeller, the founder of Standard Oil, was the son of an itinerant medicine peddler and a bigamist who wandered in and out of his son's life. John D. Rockefeller, by contrast, was a straight-laced, devout Baptist who did not wait until he became rich to become generous. I would have never been able to tithe the first million. Well, all we need is one millionaire in our church and one tithe. I mean, you know, think about what a tithe would be. He said, I would never been able to tithe the first $1 million I ever made if I had not tithed my first salary, which was $1.50 per week. Wow. What do you mean? He started giving when he was a kid. As his wealth grew, so did his giving. While every decision, attitude, and relationship was tailored to create his personal power and wealth, he said mere money making had never been his goal. A millionaire at the age of 23 Rockefeller became a billionaire by the age of 50. Now listen to this. At the age of 53, his entire body became racked with pain and he lost all the hair on his head. In complete agony, the world's only billionaire could buy anything he wanted, but he could only digest milk and crackers. An associate wrote, he could not sleep, would not smile, and nothing in life meant anything to him. His personal physician predicted he would die within a year. Rockefeller awoke one morning from a dream. During this miserable time of his life, realizing that he was not in control of his life and that he could not be taking any of his success with him when he passed on. On that day, John D. Rockefeller called his team of attorneys, accountants, and managers to establish his foundations that would channel his assets to hospitals, research, and mission work. Rockefeller spent the last 40 years of his life creating foundations that had a major impact on medicine, education, and scientific research. His foundation pioneered the development of medical research and was an instrument in the eradication of hookworm and yellow fever. His foundation led to the discovery of penicillin, cures for recurrent strains of malaria, tuberculosis, and diphtheria, along with an enormous amount of other discoveries. Now, listen to this. Rockefeller supported many church-based institutions throughout his life. At the end of his life, it is estimated that he gave away $555 million. You say, oh, yeah, he's a millionaire. But he wasn't always a millionaire. But he also said this. He said that God, when he started giving, he immediately was healed. He lived till he was 98, I believe is the age. He's in his 90s. And the key to his recovery, in some cases, was just being generous and giving up control of his money, because what had happened is his money began to control him. And he realized that when you die, you take nothing with you. That's an incredibly humbling thought. You come into this world naked and empty-handed, and you leave this world naked and empty-handed. I have just always struggled with people who think they can buy their happiness. Matter of fact, Jesus said this. He says, store your treasure in heaven, where moth and rust cannot destroy, and thieves do not break in and steal. Wherever your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be. No one can serve two masters. You either hate one and love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and be enslaved to money. Matthew 6, 20 and 21 and 24. You see, money can't make you happy. As a matter of fact, one of the things, the strange things at Christmas, everybody gets benevolent and gives, and people enjoy giving at Christmas, helping other people out. Listen, money will not make you happy, but what will happen is when you begin to give, when God controls your finances, you start to find joy by giving. And so don't think that money is the key to life. Third thing, do not let materialism destroy you. See, there's a difference between money and materialism. Materialism is the acquisition of possessions. It's the idea that things can make you happy. He said in verse 13, there's another serious problem I have seen under the sun. Hoarding harms the saver. In other words, there are some people who actually are harmed by saving. They become hoarders. This was a story that happened in 1980. It was on United Press. It's about a lady that lived in Switzerland. Her name was Mordella Borella. And let me just read to you. It's short. It says, Madela Barella lived like a beggar. She never washed or changed her clothes, and she slept on straw in a broken down hut. Local children in the village near the town where she lived called her a witch. They were scared of her. Last January, Madela collapsed on the road. Doctor said she was weak because she hardly ate, just one meal a day. The old woman was placed in a home for the aged after the hospital treatment, but she died soon after that. It says the hut was sealed and authorities began searching for the only relative, a nephew living in the United States. The nephew has now been traced, and authorities went through the hut to see what, if anything, was of value. Now get this. She lived in a broken down hut, ate one meal a day. It says they found a bank savings book showing that she had $312,000 in her account. It says they also found a key to a safe deposit box, which was found to hold gold coins worth $1.25 million. She died and lived a miserable life because she was saving money to her own detriment. Do people do that? I think so. And the tragedy is there is no way in the world that things can give you life. Now look at that next verse, verse 14. Money put into risky investments that turn sour and everything is lost. In the end, there is nothing left to pass on to one's children. Have you ever known someone to get involved with day trading? We had a family friend who got involved with day trading and had quite a bit of money and traded it away. There are those risky investments. There are those people who are trying to accumulate things and possessions. And the truth is, at the end of their life, it goes to someone else. I mean, I'm learning this with this funeral stuff and family members, that when they die, everything, every notebook, piece of paper my mom ever saved becomes mine. I talked to my brother yesterday. One of the things we're trying to do as a family, we're now down to, 4 big storage places. And our goal is to get down to 2. Maybe 5. I'm not even sure. And you know what part of the problem is? It's getting rid of the stuff. Material possessions don't make you happy, and you don't take them with. One of the things that infuriated, I had an uncle named Uncle Frank, and he probably was a millionaire. When he died, when I went by the casket, they had a $20 bill in his pocket. That just infuriated me. And they would say, well, if anybody could take $20, it'd be Frank. And I want to say, Frank didn't take $20. Nobody takes money when they die. You see, do not think that material possessions will make you happy. You're just going to have to give them to somebody else someday. But my favorite verse of the entire passage is verse 16. And I want you to think about this and maybe even meditate on it. And this too is a very serious problem. People leave this world no better off than when they came in. All their hard work is for nothing, like working for the wind. What's he talking about? Basically, what Solomon is saying is that if you just spend all your money and time on yourself, accumulating money and possessions, you've missed the point of life. Just take it and think about it. People leave this world no better off than when they came. My question for you is, if you were to die today, would this world be any better off because of you? You say, well, how do you make the world better? I'll tell you how. It's not by you having a job, making money, and spending it on yourself. You know how you do it? You invest in people. with the gospel of Jesus Christ. What are you talking about? I said, I honestly think you being in a church on Sunday, serving children, serving youth, serving adults, if you do that right and if you do that with passion, you can leave this world better off than when you came in. That verse just hit me this week, and I just thought, Lord, am I going to leave this place better than when I came here? Think about just Mount Ida. My goal when I came here, and my goal to this day, is to leave Mount Ida, to leave First Baptist Mount Ida better than when I came. You know, listen, pastors can be just like people. You just stay in your job, get a paycheck, and you know, you do your job and die and go on. Who wants to do that? Let me tell you what. You want to get joy in your life? You start serving people. You start investing in children. You start investing in youth. You start investing in adults. Leave this world in a better place than when you got here. I hope that you have. That verse just, I'm going long. It just got me. Please make sure of that. Now, I'm going to skip on down quickly to verse, the fourth thing, 18 through 20. And this is the good news. Enjoy what God has given you. He says, even so, I have noticed one thing at least that is good. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during their short life on earth. Are you enjoying life? Are you content? Are you able to eat a meal with a friend in Mount Ida, Arkansas, and go, man, this is living? Are you able to have a job? Let me tell you what, if you have a job, you may not like it, but have you ever thought about the fact that God gave it to you and it allows you to eat and put food on the table? I believe you don't have to love your job, but you can enjoy the fact that the job allows you to be able to serve God and to eat. I love, he says, so I have noticed one thing, at least that is good. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short time of life God has given them. And here's the other thing, and to accept their lot in life. Listen, I'm not going to be John Rockefeller. I can live with the fact I'm not going to be a billionaire. Can you? I'm not going to be a millionaire, probably. This is the lot. Can I accept? God has placed me in Mount Ida, Arkansas to serve God here, and that's my lot in life, and I love it. But let me tell you this, it's my choice to love it. Have you accepted that you're here and God has put you here? It is a wonderful thing, God says, to just enjoy the moment and be content. Look at verse 19, and it is a good thing to receive wealth from God and the good health to enjoy. God allows us what wealth you do have. Enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your lot in life, this is indeed a gift from God. And then I like the way he ends it. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time to brood over the past. Let me tell you what. You want to be happy? Accept your lot in life. You're here in Mount Ida. Start sharing the gospel. Get involved. Living for Him. And go forward. Just enjoy life. Be content. Enjoy it. It's a gift. Don't wish you lived somewhere else. Hey, some of y'all think, if I just lived in Dallas, I'd be happy. I lived in Dallas 13 years. I'm as happy, maybe more happy here than I was when I was there. Accept your lot in life. Enjoy life. Be content with where you are in life. That's what Solomon's saying. Life is short. Enjoy life now. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you so much for your word. And I pray that we would understand that Solomon's just being honest. And he's saying, listen, don't be surprised by power. People abuse it all the time. You just make sure you don't abuse it. He's saying, listen, money won't make you happy. Don't even think that. Things won't make you happy. Don't even think that. But then he says, just Enjoy where I've put you. Make the place that you live a better place. Invest in people. Share the gospel. Make a difference. That's the truth we need to hear this morning. Be with us, Lord, and help us to be the church that changes Mount Ida through the gospel. And I thank you for your word in Jesus' name.